Hey everybody, I'm Chris.
I'm Steven.
We like board games.
And beer.
We decided to pair them. We think you should too. Welcome to
Table Hops.
So what's up, man?
What's up?
Not much. We can't keep starting the episodes this way. We gotta have a better start.
What you drinking, Chris?
What do you drink?
What are you drinking? What are you playing?
Oh. I'll play it at home.
Come here, boyo.
No. No. Not Father McMuffins.
Father McMuffins?
This is going to be the worst. Mm,
some potato sacks I see over there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my dearly.
Jesus. Now that we've lost our entire listenership.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Steven.
We are live from your house.
Yes, we are. I always am live. That was terrible. I like your idea better. Let's go with that. So what's new with you? Have you had any beers or games that you've played recently?
Played Raiders of the North Sea, actually.
Oh, tell me. Tell me more.
So Raiders of the North Sea is, surprise, surprise, a Viking-themed worker placement game.
Aha.
Man, it's almost
seems
like...
Seems to be a...
I like them.
Theme.
I love Viking games, first of all.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So this is by Renegade Games.
Okay.
They've done things such as Explorers of the North Sea, Shipwrecks of the North Sea.
Ooh. Are these all related games?
They're all in the same universe, yeah.
Okay, but they're like different games set in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep. I see. They also did Overlight, which is that new RPG,
mm-hmm.
Kids on Bikes, which is another RPG.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah. Kind of set in like that like 80s Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's totally a Stranger Things without the licensing.
Anywho, so Raiders of the North Sea is a super easy to grasp worker placement game. So the whole idea is that every turn you start with one worker and you will end with one worker.
Okay.
So you'll place a worker. You'll take that place's action. You'll then pick up a worker and you'll take that place's action. That ends your turn.
Oh, very neat.
So there's, you know, you're getting resources to, hire members to fight in your clan. And then you take your clan and you go on expeditions to try and, you know, gain plunder.
Sure.
There's a really neat scoring mechanic where, you have to fight. Like there's no other way to get points other than to fight.
I see.
Glory
in combat.
Correct. Exactly. But you want to get strength, and you get points based on the amount of Valkyries that you get.
Awesome.
It's really nifty. The game is relatively quick.
How many players is it again?
2 to 4.
2 to 4.
Mm-hmm. There is a 5-6 player expansion.
Okay,
I believe.
You have to add on to it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I definitely want to get an expansion for it just because it feels very simple.
I see. You want something a little more meaty.
I just feel like it was very like, do this, do this, do this.
I see.
Right. The only path to victory was the battles.
Okay.
Right. So I just feel like there should be like another avenue there. It's super fun though.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's,
love
it's
to check it out.
It's a great like worker placement game to teach people that mechanic. Because the simplest rule, right? Mm-hmm. You place one, you pick up one.
Okay.
It's like
easy.
The easiest thing in the world.
Right.
Right. There's certain spaces that there's three different colored workers. There's a gray, black, and a white. And certain spaces will require that you use a certain color.
I see. Okay.
Other than that, rules are very simple. Angela and I played it in probably about 45 minutes to an hour.
How does the combat work if combat's such an important part of the...
So you build out your clan, and each of your clan members has a different strength rating. So you take your strength and you add it all up, and then you also have what's called armor, and that's on a separate track. That's scored from cards and from turning in iron and stuff like that. And then based on what spot you're going to fight in, some of them will let you roll a die as well.
Okay, I was wondering if there was like a chance element to it.
So you roll just a standard 6-sided die, and then you add that to your strength. And then each of the places will have multiple victory conditions. So, like, say you go to the monastery. The monastery has two different plunder spots, two different, like, treasure troves, if you were,
okay,
to pick up stuff from. And it also has two different point values. So, for example, if you got a 14 strength, you might get 8 points. Or if you got 22 strength, you might get 12 points. So you can kind of go in knowing, like, all right, I know I need X.
Right.
Right, to at least get something.
Sounds like this game has a lot of, like, just planning ahead, building up your armies for a specific...
Without a doubt. Yeah. And there's a clan limit. You can only have 5 dudes out at a time, so you're doing a lot of, like, killing people off to try and, try and get optimize your clan, if you were. Super cool. Very, very simple. It's a nice little, like, it's not super thinky.
Okay.
But
it's more reactionary, I guess, or?
No, just, like, it's very, like...
It's not heavy.
Place and go. It's not heavy at all, no.
It's a fun little...
Yeah. I would consider it a little bit lighter than Champions.
Okay, sure.
Right?
Might be a good gateway to Champions.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. I think I gave it a 7.5 or an 8 out of 10 on BoardGameGeek.
Cool. Nice.
Really liked it.
You don't like it as much as Champions, but it's a nice...
It's super fun. Yeah. I think it just needs that extra little mechanic that it gets from one of the expansions.
Interesting. So, all right. Yeah. I'd love to check it out.
There's like 3 expansions out for it now.
Related to that, and also small batch related, I was looking at D9's website when I was looking up stuff for our last podcast.
Okay.
And they have 2 Viking themed beers.
So interesting.
That might be something we want to check out if we're doing a Viking game down the road.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. There's also that that new brewery that's opening in Ocean View.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, it's called Kova Brewing. And from what I've heard, it's supposed to be like medieval Viking kind of like that's like their style.
Awesome. It's like St. George style-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really had a whole bunch of new beers lately.
Mm-hmm.
We've been crazy busy, sure, as always.
Right, yeah. I actually played a game this week.
What did you play?
I played Queen Domino again.
Oh, nice.
Which, the more I play the game, the more I really like it.
Yeah.
It's similar to what you were saying. It's really light to pick up,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of little intricacies that go into it.
Yeah.
It has a depth of strategy that you might not see from the surface.
You haven't played King Domino, correct?
I have not. Okay. And from what I've understood, just from reading things online, is mm-hmm. King Domino's the more simple version of it. Queen Domino has all the extra stuff added to it.
Yep. So imagine that King Domino is King of Tokyo and Queen Domino is King of New York.
Exactly. Yep.
Except when you add the Hill Giant expansion to King Domino.
Oh, interesting. There's expansions for it. Neat.
Yep.
And in the book for Queen Domino, there's a section on shuffling both together mm-hmm. and how to play those.
Yep. Super fun.
Yeah, I like them a lot.
Yeah.
The artwork, there's a little like Where's Waldo humor in the artwork, which I really enjoy.
It's almost like, I consider it like a more like modern board game version of Carcassonne.
I could see that. Sure. Right? Absolutely.
Like it's I think simpler than Carcassonne.
I think it's simpler to get going.
Yeah, without a doubt.
There are some... I think the scoring is absolutely simpler than Carcassonne. Sometimes I get a little confused, especially when you get to the...
it's very clear.
Right. And you know what you're going to get into ahead of time.
Yep.
The building... Are there buildings in King Domino too, or no?
Yeah.
Okay. I like the buildings and planning out your village ahead of time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty neat. And the grid limitations and the dragon lets you burn down
buildings. Is it still a 5x5 in Queen?
If you are playing with more than 2 people, yes.
Okay.
If it's 2 players, it's 7x7.
Yeah.
5x5 queen. And the way the game works is you can, I don't know, I've never played King Domino. It might be the same, but you have knights.
Okay.
And you use the knights to tax areas, and that's how you get your gold.
Okay.
And you use the gold to buy buildings.
Okay.
And the buildings eventually depreciate and get cheaper as you go.
Okay.
And there's a dragon, and you can pay gold to the dragon, and he'll burn down buildings that you think your opponent might want.
Okay.
And as you build certain buildings, you gain towers,
mm-hmm.
and whoever has the most towers controls the queen. And the queen counts as an extra crown for scoring at the end.
Okay.
That you get to place.
Cool.
But the queen, she's a fickle bitch, and she just jumps between whoever has the most towers or ties for the most towers.
Gotcha. Yeah, in King Domino, it's a little bit different where... it's like a bidding system, right? So first player will put their pawn down on whatever tile they want, right?
Yeah.
And then everyone else goes around the table, does it. And then whoever placed last gets to place theirs first on the next row.
Okay. In Queen Domino, you lay out 4 tiles in numerical order.
Mm-hmm.
You flip them over and you bid, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever's closest to the game board goes first.
Gotcha.
So it's not necessarily that.
Yeah.
And usually... the lower numbers or sorry, the higher numbers are more powerful, so they're near the end of it. So it ends up balancing itself out pretty nicely, which is neat. I am currently drinking the India Black Lager, the Hoppy Dark Lager, from a collaboration of Devil's Backbone and Wynwood Brewing, which is very tasty.
Yeah.
This adventure pack, or this year they're calling it the Stories from the Trail, Devil's Backbone pack.
Yeah.
Which has different beers from a bunch of different breweries, and I'm excited to try them all out.
Isn't there another Virginia brewery that does that?
Sierra Nevada. That's not Virginia brewery, North Carolina. But they also do... Yeah.
A trail... I think it's like a trail pack.
Maybe that's the adventure pack. I thought this was the adventure pack.
No, I think that's the trail pack, and the adventure pack is... Because I know exactly what you're talking about. It looks like a...
Well, you're thinking of summer camp.
Summer camp.
They do summer camp. Summer camp is fantastic, but that's different. I thought Devil's Backbone's collab thing used to be called Adventure Pack. It had like the white labels. This is new. I've never seen this. This is a new thing from them. Their Tales from the Trail thing, or Stories from the Trail.
Tales from the Trail.
So much. Your happy trail. So,
hey, Chris, What happened?
Oh, you mean this past weekend?
Yeah.
I think it's something called a...
Party Fouls.
So, we had our very first live panel at Hampton Comic Con
this
past week. It was super fun. I had a great time.
We had like 10 people. It was great.
Guess what I forgot to do?
What did you forget to do?
Record the audio.
So, they have to listen to us talk again?
Now they do. That's it. We have a nice video of just us silent, so anyone could like Mystery Science Theater it and just
open. If anybody wants to check that out, let us know.
We'll be glad to send it to you.
So what did we talked about? Kind of just us, right? Like,
right. We talked about what we do and why we do it.
Yeah, we showed Fate of the Elder Gods, episode 5.
Right.
Good
response. People seem to like it.
Yeah, a bunch of really cool questions, like the guy who's designing his own game.
And I noticed like it kind of seemed like on one side of the room there was a couple of heavy gamers, and then the other side of the room there was some like heavy beer people, like they knew like this person here and the person that was over there knew a lot about beer, which was great. So it was cool. I think people didn't really know what they were getting into, but the one guy who was closest to us who was talking, I wish I grabbed his name, I forgot, but he apparently came that day just for us.
Wow.
Which was cool. He's like, board games and beers? Love him. No, don't know him. But he's really into games and beers, and apparently we rang a bell.
Yeah. I think the most interesting fact that came out of that day, you've never played Catan.
Right. It's one of those weird things that I've never done. Yeah. It's a staple that I just haven't...
Blows my mind.
Right.
Blows my mind. Now, that being said, I'm sure you've seen this, right? All over the internet, there's this meme going around.
Mm-hmm.
Where everybody has this confessional video about how they don't own Catan.
I have not, but that's perfect. That's got to be me, right?
I have a confession to make.
Okay.
I don't own Catan. I owned 3 copies of it at one point.
But you don't now.
Because we played it all the time.
Sure.
I got rid of it.
I've never even played it. And from what I've heard of it, not to belittle the Catan fans, but I don't think I'd really like it.
I don't think so.
I think there's other games I'd rather play.
It's not your type of game. There's zero player interaction other than like, hey, will you give me 2 wood for the sheep?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Is that an innuendo?
Yes. I want you.
Yes. Oh, so good.
I want to make your sheep into a lambskin.
Oh, no. Put the lotion in the basket. Yikes.
Thanks everyone for coming out again. It was great. Thanks for Hampton Comic Con for having us out.
Absolutely, super fun.
Great time, and the con was fun. We bought some stuff.
Absolutely, really awesome cosplay.
Yeah, a bunch of awesome cosplay, and
I always go for the artwork. I always end up coming home with prints of artwork that I just really love and have no wall space for.
Yeah, same thing.
Same thing.
They're sitting on our table right now.
Right. All right, everybody. So today we are talking about small batch games and small batch beers.
Yeah.
What is a small batch, Steven? What would in the game world?
In the game world. So, to me, and everyone's going to think differently about this, but to me, a small batch would be something like an indie game from somebody who's maybe published 1 or 2 games before, but hasn't reached the level of like being able to fund their own stuff.
So they do everything through FundMe, like Kickstarter?
They might do a Kickstarter, or they might have like angel investors that are helping them out.
Okay.
a good example of that is Everdell.
Okay.
Right? So that was done by Starlight Games.
Okay.
Kickstarted it. They had done, I think, two games before, but never any like huge success, right?
Like, come out like Everdell is.
Yeah. And Everdell came out to be a huge success.
Right.
You know, we've talked about this before where my opinions on Kickstarter and how it's used is a little questionable, right? Sure. But I do think that, you know, the industry is so large now that investors are willing and want to look into supporting new ventures like that.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that the production level can be about the same. Sure, you're going to run into some problems, right?
Sure.
The stick on Everdell, right? The first time they printed it, all the sticks are super rolly, so they don't stay on the board.
Right.
You know, they roll everywhere.
Little bowl. Keep them in.
The rules weren't like they made sense, but they weren't very clear.
I see.
Needed some clarifications. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's like you kind of have to infer, and you know. One person reads it one way, another person reads it another way. Mm-hmm. So you do run into some problems like that. There are mom and pop shops that just do their own thing. You know, there's a company that does wallet-sized games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen those. Those are pretty cool.
They're super cool. They do a monthly thing where people give them, I think it's like $15 or whatever, and they get them a game every month.
Oh, neat.
Super cool. Don't think they'll ever become a huge production.
Right, because if you're distributing games at that speed, they're probably not going to be that much, not that innovative.
Right.
They're going to be based on something else.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a simple word game.
Exactly. So, yeah. And, you know, similar to, I'm sure every industry has this, right? But there's two big giants, right? There's two big giants in the board game industry, right? Okay. There's AEG and there's Asmodee.
I see.
They swallow up people every year.
They purchase the smaller, I say.
They purchase these smaller, successful companies, right?
They're the InBev of the game world.
Sometimes not even so small.
Okay.
Asmodee bought Mayfair. Mayfair does all those like card games, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't know if they're going to be reproducing those.
I see. Oh, that's, yeah.
For example, the Oh My Goods expansion is out of print right now. There's no plans to bring it back. And now this game, this expansion that was $20 is going for $150.
Because they don't know if it's going to be reprinted.
Exactly.
Wow.
And everyone wants it because
sure.
Oh My Goods became like this thing that was like a small Mayfair game. And then it became this huge, huge thing. But yeah, I mean, I think that that relates into like the InBev conversation.
Right. All right. So InBev, if you don't know, is the Anheuser-Busch conglomerate, the macro brewery that swallows up some of these smaller hometown breweries, which sometimes can be great and sometimes not so much.
There is a huge like pushback to that though, right?
Sure. It's kind of like the what's the selling out rule, right? You don't want people kind of look down on certain breweries if they sell out to a larger corporation.
That's interesting because that doesn't exist in the board game industry.
I see.
Typically when companies merge or companies get bought out, it just makes them better. Like, it gives them better production resources and stuff like that.
Because you get money out of it. Absolutely. You get...
Sure.
Yeah. You just have a higher... what am I trying to say? You have more resources to pull from when you're owned by a larger company.
Right.
In the beer world, it kind of depends because sometimes some breweries, when they're bought out by these larger companies... Instead of taking that capital and continuing with their business and having some of the profits go to that larger thing, they just give everything to that conglomerate, let someone else run it. So then you end up with something in terms of Terrapin, right? Mm-hmm. Who was one of my favorite microbrews, but I've heard and have noticed that their later reiterations of their classic recipes, they're just not as good.
Hmm.
And I think it's just because they have someone else running them.
Interesting.
But then you end up with another... brewery such as like Devil's Backbone out of RRM Virginia, who is owned by InBev, but I think they use their capital and still run their own company and still innovate and do collaborations with other breweries.
Yeah.
So I think they use it in a more positive way.
Interesting. But overall, it's a negative feeling, right?
It is. It's kind of similar to like the music industry and like, you know, if you think about like, you know, the punk scene, if you're a punk band and you're owned by any record label, you're right. a sellout
right.
instantly.
Right.
I think it could be a very good thing for certain businesses or a bad thing for others.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Depends how you use the power given to you.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned it last episode that Sam Adams is like the...
Sam Adams, from what I've understood, is I'm not in the beer industry, but from what I've talked to people that are in the business beer industry, is Sam Adams is the level that you can be under and still count as a microbrewery.
Okay.
So Sam Adams is the largest microbrewery in the country.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know of any foreign breweries, this might be wrong, but I don't know any foreign breweries that are completely independent that still ship over here. I can't think of any Asian breweries that are here without being owned by Coors or Anheuser. Like Sapporo and Asahi, Red Pony, but no one wants that.
No, there. I can't remember. I do know there is one.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it, but some of my bartender friends were telling me that they recently came over here for a trip.
Oh, cool.
They were visiting. They're good friends with Malia from The Birch.
I see.
So they were coming over and doing like a tasting and the whole shebang at her new 411 York restaurant.
Okay.
I'll check that out and report back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe next week's Maybe random next fact week. Of the day.
Right. It would be good if you had a random fact of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
About your 1-inch penis.
It's not random. Tiny fact of the day.
Hey, Chris, leave that in.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, in the beer industry, a small batch, right? There's two definitions of small batch. In a home brewer thing, it's anything under 5 gallons.
Okay.
Is a small batch.
Got it.
Because then you got to cut down the recipe. Five sure. gallons is standard, so anything smaller counts as a small batch.
Sure.
Anything in the microbrewer industry is anything that's a limited release, right? Anything that you're going to do once that's not consistent year to year.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's not a seasonal beer. You're not going to do the same recipe next year. It's something that you're trying out, which might eventually lead to a seasonal beer or even a staple if it ends up being good enough.
Okay.
So a small batch is sort of an experimental.
Gotcha.
Right.
What about, would you consider like nitro variations of stuff a small batch?
I don't think so.
Okay.
And the reason I don't think so is because that's not something the brewery they might set it up,
mm-hmm.
but you're really just taking something that's already made
right.
and nitroing it.
Okay.
You're just
sure.
Affecting it.
Sure.
Now, on the similar side of that, anything that's barrel aged would count as a small batch.
Okay.
Because it has to go through that aging and fermentation process in the barrels.
Right. What about the Rattler?
Again, I don't think that counts as a small batch because you're actually not brewing anything.
Okay.
You're just pushing something through something else. You're infusing it with a different flavor.
Gotcha.
I mean, some people might call that a small batch, but to me that's more at the distribution point than it is. Like, you're not going to bottle something that you rattle.
Okay.
You're going to put it on tap.
Gotcha. Right.
So the Stone Chocoveza, which is a Mexican chocolate stout, is currently released right now, but they have two small batch versions of it. The Chocoveza Chard, which is in their bourbon barrels, and then they have the Chocoveza Extra Añejo,
okay,
which is their tequila barrel-aged one. So those would be interesting to try out because I love the standard Chocoveza. That one's awesome.
Do you know the backstory behind that beer?
No.
So 2014, 2015, something like that. It's actually a recipe by a home brewer.
Oh, interesting.
Stone did a competition. This guy named Chris Banker entered it in and won the competition. And then Stone, from that point on, has been making this.
Right. It's fantastic.
Initially, it started as a very small release. Mm-hmm. Similar to like the Warlock, which is another small release from Southern Tier.
Right.
And then now it's everywhere. You know, Kroger's picked it up,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting.
Right.
So, yeah. And now they're doing all these I think this is only the second year they've done these variations.
Right. I've never had the variations. That's the other thing about small batch beers is sometimes you can only get them at the brewery.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is very cool. I mean, that's a great reason to visit your local brewery is if they have things that you like, when you go there, they'll usually have variants on it.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think it's important to have a reason to come in.
Sure.
Right? Especially some of these smaller breweries that, you know, have a bar that's a 6-foot table.
Right.
Right? Like, there needs to be a reason for me to come in. A droid. Great example of that.
Absolutely.
Right?
With their Ghost series.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but they have stuff that's only available at the brewery.
Right.
Hawaiian Punch.
Exactly. Like, they might have a staple release, and then they'll have different variants on that. But then those are small batches because they're not going to make those again.
Yeah.
Unless they are very successful. Speaking of which, the Adroit Theory's Death of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm.
This leads us into our... Random Fact of the Day. So, Steven, we mentioned this at our live panel.
That we didn't record.
Right. I looked up the ghost number.
Okay.
They use what they call a ghost number instead of a regular distribution or serial number for their batches. And we couldn't put our finger on what the flavors were for the Death of Cthulhu.
Right.
So what they are, looked them up.
I'm ready.
Is marshmallow.
Okay. Not so weird.
And seaweed.
That's pretty weird.
Yes, it is. And they say that it's the sweetness of the marshmallow and the saltiness of the seaweed that gives it that flavor.
You know what we should do?
What should we do?
If we reach 100 subscribers on our YouTube channel,
yeah,
we will both eat marshmallow sushi.
Oh, yeah. We could just roll the little marshmallow in a little. It might be awesome.
Dip it in Death of Cthulhu.
Oh, man. I'll dip anything in Death of Cthulhu. All right, guys. You heard it. So 100 subscribers, we will do the thing.
You've got mail. You've got mail.
What's in the bag? What's in the bag? Hey, 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 what's in the bag? What's in the mailbag?
No, Steven. So this week we had our first live panel, and I was happy to find there was a lot of audience interaction. There was a lot of questions that they had about beers and games.
The majority of the questions were, what would you pair with X?
Exactly. And
I think my favorite one
was,
what would you pair with Guess Who?
Right. Which we both agree, you need to go to Trader Joe's. You need to get their mystery pack that comes in that really sketchy paper bag.
Yeah.
And you just need to reach in and taste it without looking.
Have you ever gotten a pack that you were disappointed by?
Not an entire pack.
Correct. I've been disappointed by one or two beers in it.
Right.
But never the whole pack.
No, absolutely not. There's always been, I've had more, ooh, than, aw.
Sometimes there's bombers in there too.
Oh, I haven't never gotten a bomber.
Oh, yeah. Those are the big price point boys.
Right. Well, the people that make their cork cage bombers, that's Unibrew.
Mm-hmm.
That makes all their Trader Joe's anniversary
Unibrew
stuff.
And Petrus.
Right. That's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're for $6-$7.
I know, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because they're just as good as some of their staples.
Yeah,
they're
very
good Belgians.
That out. We also got asked about if we had ever designed our own game before.
Right.
Which
we talked about it like when we were kids, we did some funny things, but we met somebody who actually does design his own games.
Yeah. I don't think that I'd never be a good board game designer.
I think you would be great at designing or mechanic.
Development. Yeah. Development and production, I think, would be more my key.
Sure.
I think you'd be a better designer than I am.
Well, we already have our Table Hops all white game planned. That's going to be a hit.
It's going to be the best thing ever.
Oh, man.
Special release coming to Kickstarter in April. Check it out.
My personal favorite pairing, which I'm very proud of, is I was asked what I would pair Monopoly with.
Yep.
And it's National Bohemian, Natty Bo, because the mascot looks like the Monopoly guy.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. I don't think I would pair anything with Monopoly besides sadness. Now that's not to slight the Monopoly gamers in the world, especially the people who play the Monopoly Gamers Edition.
What? Tell me about that. I don't know.
I know nothing about it other than it's a Monopoly game that says Gamers Edition. Okay. And there's...
Well, I have the Monopoly Nintendo Edition.
No, this is different. These are like advanced rules and like a whole bunch of, if you ask me, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, you know what?
Whatever, each their own.
Yep.
Whatever floats your boat.
If that gets you and your friends or you and your family to the table to play board games together, fantastic.
You know what I think we need to do, Steven?
Oh, boy.
I think you need to play Monopoly with me. It's a little different.
Are we done for Table Hops? Is that it? Is this how we go out by playing Monopoly together?
So when I play Monopoly, if you're able to sneak money out of the middle, it's yours.
Like steal it?
Yes. But if anyone catches you.
Out of the bank?
Yes. But the bank's in the middle.
That's straight cheating.
Yeah, you have to straight cheat a Monopoly. You can't play Monopoly legit. That's boring as shit. If you, if you manage to steal money, you just get it. But if someone catches you, you go right to jail.
Do you auction?
Like properties?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you land on a property. You choose not to buy it. It goes, it goes up for auction.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it goes on way too long.
You play no free parking as well.
No, I put the money in the middle.
What do you mean?
When I play the game, whenever you have to pay the bank something or something like that, or you have to pay something, it goes in the middle in a big pot. Oh. And if you land on free parking. Free parking in Boston, you get the pot.
That was not a Boston accent.
No. Free parking in Boston? Yeah, you get the pot. Dude, I think you just need to play Monopoly the wrong way, and then you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, just...
straight cheating.
I'm just going to go the other way on the board. I'm going to go not? Counterclockwise.
Why not?
Can I...
Girls go one way, guys go the other way.
I have a pop-up question for you.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I think this could be a recurring segment as well.
Pop-up.
Here we go.
Yep.
What would you pair...
Oh, goodness.
...with Connect Four? Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Oh, that is a good fucking question. I would pair a Session IPA. Because I could drink three in a row, and I can go for one more.
Oh, kill me.
I got it. I did it, Steven. I did it.
Swing me from the rooftop. Have Hammond crush me. Anything. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed the final episode of Table Hops. Enjoy the rest of your life. Be sure to not check out anything because the channel won't exist by the time you find it.
Quitting.
All right, Hop Hunters. Yep. We need your help.
Yes. If you have a beer or game that you want us to pair, please send your ideas in the comments below or to tablehopspodcast@gmail.com.
We need ideas, guys. Yep. We're running out of them.
Running out.
Anything. Anything at all. If it's Coors Light,
yep,
send it on in.
Coors Light, Chinese Checkers. No, that'd be Sapporo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Table Hops Podcast. Be sure to visit us at tablehopspodcast.com, leave us an iTunes review, or visit us on social media at Table Hops Podcast.
Be sure to check out our videos on YouTube and email us your feedback and questions to tablehopspodcast@gmail.com.
And remember,
good beers,
good games,
great times! UV, or I don't know what you call it, like the one eye of the 3D glasses, I guess. You know what I'm saying?
The decoder?
It has that, yeah.
The one eye of the 3D glasses.
You know what I was doing.
The one-dimensional glass.
The 1D glasses. It's the monocle.
It actually makes your sight worse.
Worse, yeah.